just nothing wrong. He said, I'm sorry, honey, but it's all in your head. I know that you're right, but could you hold me tonight? You're hurting, but I can't find the thread. I feel how you care. Won't you stop this affair? Doctor, 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 give me pills or give me love. You're the only one who knows how I try so hard to let it all go. Doctor, 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 doctor.
Party 93.4. I am Luke, your host. I led off with the song Doctor, which is featured on the Bird and the Bee's latest release, Recreational Love. It's the fourth studio album from the excellent musical duo out of California. And speaking of duos, during this broadcast, I'll be airing an interview that I conducted with the writing duo Harris Gray, who reside here in Colorado. However, before I get into that, as always, I wanted to remind you to check out Party 93.4 on Facebook at facebook.com/party93.4 and on Twitter at twitter.com/party93.4. If you're feeling generous, please consider donating to the radio station by clicking on the donate button located at the main page of the Party 93.4 website. Anyway, as I said, I'm going to be showcasing my interview with the writing duo Harris Gray. They're the authors of the Vampire Vic trilogy. The first book is already out, and the second one is expected to hit the shelves in September. You can find out more information by visiting their website, harrisgray.com. They also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/harrisgrayauthor, and a Twitter account, twitter.com/harrisandgray. So without further ado, here's my interview with Harris Gray. You're listening to Party 93.4. Naturally, I thought we'd begin here with asking how you met each other and how you decided to become a writing duo.
Well, the way I remember it is I used to go into Jason's coffee shop. Jason owns a coffee shop here in Castle Rock, Colorado.
What's the name of it?
Jason?
Oh, it's Crowfoot, like the bird, Crowfoot Valley Coffee.
How did you come up with that name?
You know, I looked at a map, looked at a local map and wanted something that was local but not too local. I didn't want to call it like Douglas County or Castle Rock Coffee or so. There's an actual valley called Crowfoot Valley that's northeast of Castle Rock, about 10 miles northeast. I thought it just lent itself to a good name.
Okay. Anyway, going back to so how did you guys meet exactly?
So I had the coffee shop, I still do, and
you go
Al
ahead,
would come in and write.
What were you gonna say?
You go ahead.
Oh, would you like me to?
Sure, whatever you want.
Oh, well, so yeah, I would write in Jason's coffee shop, and then sometimes I would go to the bathroom, and I would come back out, and there would be notes scribbled in the margins of my journal. I used to hand write my books, and so I tried to ignore it, and then after a while, I would find things crossed out and extra stuff added, and I asked Jason to stop, and he wouldn't do it. So,
I thought you were joking.
Pretty soon, when I was getting ready to file a complaint, I thought, well, I should read it, and it was actually pretty good. And then I hoped you would stop putting X-Lax in my latte, lengthen my bathroom trips.
Did you, Alan, regularly visit Jason's coffee shop and just, you know, one day decided to approach him after, or did you talk with him immediately?
Well, sort of. Jason's a storyteller, so I would pretend to write and eavesdrop here and there, and he had some wild tales from his childhood.
So Jason would be telling these stories to his customers then?
Exactly. So I would jot notes here and there, but sometimes he talks fast, so I can't get it all down, so I said, you know, just in case something happened to him, which seemed likely based on the stories he was telling, I say, you should just jot this stuff down. And the next day I came back to my little writing nook at his coffee shop, and there was this little yellow notepad just crammed full of stories.
What kind of stories did you, Jason, indulge your customers with? And do you still do that?
Yeah, I still do to a point. I mean, it was in my youth, I think that I took too many chances and mostly escaped by the skin of my teeth. And so it's always, you know, usually if a customer says, oh, geez, you should have seen what happened last week to me. I, you know, almost drowned or I almost got arrested. And I'll say, oh, geez, that reminds me of when I got arrested in Washington one time and I escaped from jail.
Did that really happen?
Yes.
Can you go into detail or...
Jason, yeah, a little bit.
Jason, are your parents there, Jason?
They are here, but they can't hear me. Dad's almost deaf.
Oh, good. Okay.
So it was in Renton, Washington. I was still in high school. It was at a dance club called Scoochies. It's S-K-O-O-C-H-I-E-S, Scoochies. And a friend of mine, he was a couple years older than me. He was in the Army. His girlfriend had asked me to come out to her car to have some beers So it was her and her best friend were having beers in the car. I was in the back seat of this convertible, like a 19-something older Ford Fairlane convertible. You know, pretty sweet car. And we're behind this dance club drinking, and the police officer came up behind us and, you know, actually pretty nice about it. Kind of just talking to us, telling us to kind of calm down and maybe we should just go back inside. There was going to be no kind of hubbub about it. And then the police officer and the girls started arguing. And next thing you know, I'm in the Renton police station on the second floor getting ready to be processed. And, you know, it's a longer story than that, but while I was waiting to be processed, I asked to leave the line to go call my sister to see if she would pick me up, because I knew my parents would kill me. And when I went to the where the phone room was, there was a window and on the second floor, and I jumped out the window.
Did the police come back after you?
Nope, never did. Jumped out the window and ran back to the club, which is probably 3 or 4 miles away, and disposed of the paperwork. And I imagine they had some paperwork, but nothing ever came of it. So I lucked out.
Has that been your only run-in with the law?
Yeah, with the law. I mean, you know, there's always been a couple of close calls. I just knock on wood. I was super fortunate and lucky. You know, that's from our first book. Al and I had a compilation of stories for our first book. It's called "And We Fished Some More." It's actually a story, short stories that revolve around these kind of things. And there's probably a half dozen stories from Alaska. I lived in Alaska for 10 years, and then there are half dozen stories from Washington as well. And then we kind of interwove them. The book is mainly about those stories and how basically panicking never serves you. My father taught me early on how no situation that panicking helps.
Sometimes I hear Jason's dad's voice via Jason's voice in my ear telling me exactly that.
So is this book published?
Yeah, it's sort of published. That was back in our early days. So we put it together. We paired each story with a recipe, and went through a self-publishing outfit. And so yeah, it still exists. I think you can find it out there. We hope to do it upright at some point here once we get some momentum with the books that we're writing right now and the Vampire Vic trilogy.
And about the Vampire Vic trilogy, what is it about?
We wanted to do our best to jump on the Twilight bandwagon.
Okay.
Luke, have you seen Twilight?
No, I've seen True Blood, which admittedly I actually liked that. I didn't think I would, but I've seen True Blood, but not Twilight. I haven't got into that.
This is actually probably closer to True Blood than it is Twilight, but
yeah. I wanted to say True Blood meets Twilight, but I don't feel that's accurate.
Oh, maybe that, yeah.
So we're sitting around. Jason, in the evening time, Jason's coffee shop slips into something a little more comfortable and becomes a little bar. He's got some craft beers on tap, some wine, some mixed drinks. So we're sitting around having some of those things and thinking about how we can rip off Twilight. And so we're talking about sexy vampires and super sexy vampire slayers. And and then we realize that we're just kind of joking around saying, well, you know, so much for that because we don't know anything about sexy. Our vampire is balding. He's a little overweight. He's an accounting manager, and he gets queasy at the sight of blood.
The idea, he's a reluctant vampire. You know, he was bitten, kind of a cheeseball dorks kind of guy, and then he gets bit, and part of him is super upset about it, and part of him thinks that maybe he'll turn into one of those dashing sort of vampire guys.
When did you start developing ideas for Vampire Vic?
Is it 2 years ago, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say two and a half years ago. I mean, it started out, like Alan said, we're like, geez, it'd be fun to write something like this. But it really wasn't. I couldn't know how serious we were. And then the next thing you know, we're kind of talking about plot line and storyline and how tongue-in-cheek it would be in some respects, and in some respects very serious. So it's,
and, you know, yeah, I didn't take it seriously. And then Jason, one day I come to his coffee shop, and the first chapter of Vampire Vic is sitting there. And I thought it was pretty cool, really offbeat, really quirky, right in line with our style. Humorous, but with a dark, you know, with a real dark theme. So Vampire Becky's right in the middle of normal everyday life, but he's a vampire and he's reluctant to bite. And so that inspired me. It's kind of our style, where one of us will take off and write something and, you know, crank out a chapter and throw it the other guy and see where it goes from there. And this one just kept rolling.
How did you get into writing? What inspired you?
You know, it goes way back. When I was going to school, I went to the University of North Dakota, and I was in business, and so I was taking business classes, but you got to get your prerequisites out of the way, so I was taking an English comp course, and it was the creative semester, and I wrote a little piece or two, and then my English professor, she invited me into her office one day, and there was a third, and she invited a third, which was the dean of the English department, and she said, I want to introduce my favorite pupil. And so being a business guy, I was very embarrassed that I couldn't get out of there fast enough. And then I went into business, and which continues to treat me well to this day, no knock on business and my unnamed employer. But I realized about 3 years into business that, gosh, I'd like to write. So I kicked it off, and you know, I had a great time writing, but it wasn't until I moved to Castle Rock. We lived in Minneapolis, and we moved to Castle Rock, and I figured I'd have to sit in Starbucks all day to write, and it turns out there was a coffee shop there run by a guy that knows what he's doing. And yeah, so I've been home there ever since, and the collaboration kicked in.
have you done any writing yourself, Jace? I mean, before you met Alan, did you do any writing?
No, I mean, I did write, and I liked it, and I fashioned myself as a poet, you know, and I think, who didn't when they're in college trying to get chicks? But I'd like to write, but I never really thought it was my my way of really getting my voice out there. I never really did that. I was in a band for a while, and I like to do things like that, but I don't, I think that seeing Alan do it and watching him do it and then letting me force myself upon him was nice, because then we start writing together more and more, and then we feed off each other really well. And I think that I'm a little more of an extrovert than Alan is, and so that I was able to get friends and relatives and other literary people in college at colleges to read our stuff.
Luke, when I would come out of the bathroom sometimes in the coffee shop, Jason would have my journal. He'd be sitting on the bar doing impromptu readings for the customers in the coffee shop. And sometimes it was my journal too, so it wasn't always the fiction.
Jeez.
Gosh, I wish that wasn't true.
When you both choose to write something together, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, well, so like Java Man, so our first real book together, after we put together Jason's collection of stories, the first fiction book was a book I'd been researching for a long time. I just thought it was the coolest idea. Real world guy back in 1900, back when doctors were scientists and vice versa. He invented a cure for cancer. It was based on ramping up your immune system. In fact, driving your immune system just nutty, basically taunting it and turning it loose and wiping out your cancer. And it actually worked. And then the next thing you know, chemotherapy kicked in and radiation therapy, and it just got lost in the shuffle and nobody believed it was true, and nobody could replicate it. And I'm thinking, God, this is just, first of all, I wanted that to come true. And second, I thought, you know, that'd be a great fictionalized historical account. So I was just struggling trying to write that. And then when Jason and I got going, and I'm listening to his anecdotes, his stories about his customers, the names withheld, we realized together that this is Java Man. This is the cancer story I wanted to tell. Unfortunately, it involved the owner of the coffee shop that sometimes very loosely resembles Jason, which led to its own benefits and problems.
Going back to Vampire Vic, how did you conceive the character of Vic himself?
He's a composite of the two of us, I'd say, with fangs, with really skinny Eddie Munster-style fangs.
And what about some of the other central characters?
We've got a vampire slayer in there. So just the same way that Vic is a really, really lame vampire, we've got a vampire slayer that, you know, actually he's a really fine vampire slayer, but not really through the normal operating methods. Kind of stumbles into his kills. He's a young guy, he's super passionate about it. Eugene the Vampire Slayer is his name.
He's like almost like a bumbling idiot who for some reason just gets the job done. And he's gifted and at the same time bumbling. When I started writing his character, it was really off of Peter Sellers on the Pink Panther, kind of. That kind of gave me the idea of it. It's like the Pink Panther guy that, you know, he's kind of a screw up but always gets the job done. And that's kind of like, you know, a younger version of that, kind of crass, kind of a jackass, but at the same time somehow gets the job done in between his multi-level marketing.
When and where does Vampire Vic take place?
It's in Houston. Most of it takes place in Houston. We just thought that the thought of an accounting manager, fat, balding accounting manager in Houston was just absolutely perfect. And plus then it distracted people from realizing that characters were actually patterned after everybody in Jason's coffee shop.
When does it take place, Vampire Vic?
Right now.
Yeah, it's a period piece in the period we're in. So it's a now book, and it's more like True Blood, where the vampires are instant among us. So they're not welcome, but they're not disdained either. There's a population that welcomes the vampires, and there's a population that doesn't like them, and so they kind of live in and out of the shadows.
Do you have flashbacks, like in True Blood, to maybe an earlier time period?
Luke, we couldn't have fed you these questions any better.
Yeah.
Our backstory. So, Jason, again, this is kind of one of the beauties of co-writing. We're cranking along, and the next thing you know, Jason has inserted this character that we came to call the Civil War Soldier, and turns out his roots go back to Romania, to a little town, Târgu Mureș, in Romania, in Transylvania, actually. So we started to dig back, we started to research Romania, and the backstory came to light. 16th century, it dates back, the origins of Vampire Vic's curse, and actually Eugene the Vampire Slayer's origins that go back to Târgu Mureș in 16th century Romania. So actually, I have a couple plane tickets to Romania in September to fill out and research the final chapter, the third book in the trilogy. One or more of us will be in Romania.
Oh, so is this going to be your first trip out there to Romania?
It will be, but, you know, just by just a happy coincidence, my wife, she saw me on the internet researching Romania. At one point, I was watching a six-hour war epic of a Romanian warlord with subtitles, made in 1970, which, you know, it's beautiful. You can get that on the internet, but sometimes it can get to be a little much. And she had had enough of watching me watching that movie, so she bought us a couple tickets. She and I, supposedly, that was her plan, was she and I would go to Romania.
What research do you hope to pick up there while you're in Romania?
Well, there's a cave. We want to find the cave where a lot of the sort of the origin messages were written. This Târgu Mureș, it's in Transylvania, so we're hoping it's super creepy and filled with people in trench coats, and some people with stakes, some people with trench coats. We want to get the feel. So everything that the internet can't give us, and that, you know, we couldn't absorb from Nadia Comăneci, we want to feel what Romania is really, really like.
That's cool. And you mentioned the second book earlier. When does that come out?
Right in the middle of September.
How does it relate to the first book, and what can we expect from it?
Man, I would say it's just it. So the first book, we had a blast exploring Vic's personality and what it would be like for a normal everyday dude with his problems to become a vampire. You know, he gets walked on in the office. He has a staff, an accounting staff, and they don't respect him. And they especially don't respect him when he's a vampire that doesn't bite anybody. He's got an ex-wife that won't let him move out because it's more cost-effective for them to live together. So it's a lot of that. And until Vic gets bit, until Vic bites someone else. That's how averse he is to biting. I can't even bring myself to talk about him biting somebody. And then everything changes. And the book, the first book ends with kind of Vic on that acceleration, on that upswing. And then book two gets, so the vampire world starts to come to life. And so the kind of the picture expands. You start to get a feel for really who his ex-wife is. Eugene the Vampire Slayer gets bigger, badder, more distracted. What else, Jason? What other highlights?
I think it polarizes more, too. The second book is darker and funnier at the same time. I think Alan's right. The first one is, I think what's nice about the first one, I think it'll appeal to people that don't usually read vampire books, because it really is about any guy or any person and just how crappy his life is. And then something happens that he thinks is going to actually turn around and actually makes it worse. And then it goes from there. So the second book just kind of, like Alan said, explores it more. And it's darker, it's badder for sure. You know, we talk about the first one being like PG-13 and this one being R. We were fortunate, the first book, top 10 independent book of the year, indie book of the year. So that was nice. And so we're hoping that this book kind of takes off from that.
Do you think the third book, I mean, you said you're going to go to Romania for research purposes, but do you think the third book may even go darker and more comedic, or have you guys even thought about what you might do for that?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. The longer we live in this world, the wilder things get. So, you know, everything starts tying together, and you start seeing all these connections that you didn't know existed in the first book, and starting to come to light in the second book. And what, you know, what's the curse all about? How come Vic is a special vampire? There are things about him that are a little out of the ordinary. vampires don't like him. People are afraid of him. He's a unique guy, and he's kind of the key to the curse and whether or not vampires rule the world, rule the day.
Do you have some idea of when the third book might be released, like next year or the following year?
It'll be next year.
Yeah, it'll be 2016 for sure. It's just a matter of when.
Okay, so Vampire Vic will definitely be a trilogy. There won't be a fourth book or maybe some side stories related to it, like a spinoff.
Well, we're kind of thinking just like the Twilight movies, where we're actually going to split the third book of the trilogy into two books.
Oh, okay. So
it's still a trilogy.
I see what you're saying.
It's still a trilogy with four or five books in it.
No more than six books in our trilogy.
And other than Vampire Vic, it's also my understanding that you both have written a couple of screenplays together.
Yeah, we have Alan and I wrote, Alan mostly wrote this, was it Cornfield, Alan?
Yeah, and you know, it's just one of the crazy things, something I never would have done, and getting to know Jason and then basically living at his coffee shop. He had a movie maker come in one day and he's getting to know us, and he says, hey, you know, we should write a movie. And the next thing you know, we have a script. Cornfield was supposed to be a little bit of a play on Cloverfield, if you remember that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the handheld, of course, no one had ever done that subsequently, the handheld camera movie. And we actually think we have a pretty good script. We had a blast writing it. We started to film it. We had casting calls in Castle Rock. We had auditions. We had sponsors we were lining up. We had a cornfield maze north of Denver that allowed us to film there. So we shot a ton of footage, and then we realized at a certain point that we had bitten off a little more than we could chew in terms of the movie-making experience.
Well, besides that, without divulging his name, that the main director-producer, he ended up being flaky and left. I mean, we were in the middle of doing everything, and next thing you know, Al and I, instead of, I had never directed before, next thing you know, I'm directing, and Alan's co-producing, and it became a cluster pretty fast. So it was a lot of fun, super learning experience. Besides that, well, we did write a Christmas play together, and I directed it, and Alan actually acted in it, and that was at the Parker Playhouse, gosh, 6 years ago? I don't know.
Yeah, I was the narrator. Somebody told me I sounded like Casey Kasem, so I wanted to be the narrator.
Do you think you'll ever go back to releasing that or working on that movie and maybe even releasing it someday?
I hope so.
It's a really good piece. It's super funny. It's right up our alley. It's quirky. We started writing that and doing that right when GMO started to kind of be a thing. And Alan was right on top of all the GMO stuff, from being from North Dakota. There's a lot of GMO products out there and a lot of negative feedback. And it was a
GMO
really...
We shouldn't spoil the ending just in case this comes out, but the killer is the GMO corn.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it's a slasher.
The slasher movie.
Luke, we had so many cool scenes built into that thing with corn cob, you know.
Flying out of people's chests and stuff.
Yes.
And Alan, as far as other work, I read that you were a guest columnist for the Denver Post. What topics did you delve into?
You know, Denver Post, just a great opportunity for up-and-coming writers or just talented folks around town that have something to say. They have a contest every year to be one of those Colorado voices, and I had that honor a couple years back. Probably my favorite was what it's like to be an atheist married to a Christian, and how glad I am that I have that opportunity. And that do the best I can to convince my kids to if they're going to choose sides, to go with my wife. Then all the comfort and non-dark endings that the atheists see. Jason and I, man, that's part of one of our themes in our books too. Really, the kind of the recurring theme is what happens after. Java Man really explores that when the main character, who just very, very barely resembles Jason, gets his cancer and starts worrying a little bit about what comes next.
So, Alan, you're an atheist, and then your wife is Christian. Is that correct?
She's way Christian. I mean, she just knows.
How does that work out exactly? I mean, do you guys butt heads?
Yeah, we did. We did when we first got married, because I'd read a lot and I figured I had it all figured out, you know. And who wouldn't agree once I laid out my case? And turns out my wife, Julie is her name, She is a Christian deep in her soul. There's just absolutely no doubt with her. So for a while, I was a little frustrated. And then one day it dawned on me, and probably coincident with having kids. And I thought about, you know, what do I want my kids? How do I want them to feel, like me waking up with night sweats and calling Jason on the phone and crying, and then hearing him cry and then hanging up, like, you know, thinking that really didn't do me any good. Or do I want them to be like my wife, who just knows how it's going to go down and is just happy as can be? So I cheerlead as much as I can for the good side.
Do you have any upcoming book signings planned?
Well, that's why I'm in Seattle now, actually. I decided to go up, just strike out on my own and do a big book signing here without Alan.
It felt like a retaliatory book signing tour, trying to figure out what I did wrong.
So you're in Seattle now. What else are you going to be hitting?
Our goal is to get a tour bus and have our wives drive it while we just drink martinis in the back of it.
And write. And go to book signings. So we have a publicist that we just brought on board, Samantha Lean. We owe her for this, and we owe her for everything else she's setting up. So she's fairly early in the process. We've got book reviewers, we've got bloggers. She's setting up book signings for us, talks. We've got a talk coming up in November with Nerd Night. That's local in Denver. We've got a few different things in the hopper and much more to come. One of our favorite things to do is book clubs. We've hosted book clubs. Jason at his shop, at some of the folks' houses, we've had them read our book and then hosted that book club. And some of the best, some of the wildest, sometimes some of the toughest experiences we've had, but you get face-to-face critique. Turns out people are not shy about letting you know about the book, plus or minus. And it's just been the best feedback that we've had for getting better, for making the books better and improving them. It's really kind of a workshop process for us.
It's a nice workshop process. And also, I think we've been fortunate for the most part that it validates us. I mean, I think that Al and I always think we're funny bouncing things off each other. And sometimes we can be our own worst critics. You know, last year we were able to go to Minnesota for a big book club type deal. And it was really great because I think it was one of those things where at the end of the day, we got done with a book club and everyone was just, there was a lot of affirmation going on. So it was pretty cool.
Before I wrap up this interview, I thought I'd ask you, what do you guys like to do outside of writing?
Well, we like to golf together. Alan likes to roll the golf cart when I'm inside.
I don't like it.
I wish that wasn't a true story.
Yeah, I know. Sorry again.
I know. We like to golf. I like to fish a lot. I go kayaking a lot. I think that Al and I have a lot of goals in mind to spend more time together, but it never seems to come up.
We have a writer's retreat up in the mountains, up right off the edge of the Rocky Mountain National Park outside of Grand Lake.
Okay.
It's owned by someone else, but we retreat up there from time to time, and maybe just the two of us, maybe with our wives. And yeah, and just see if we can get Jason in trouble and, you know, write down a few anecdotes and try to work into our story.
It usually has to do with me falling out of a canoe, and then at the last second, Alan fishes me out with a hook.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Clyde, I appreciate you guys joining me here for the interview.
Thanks,
well, I appreciate
man.
It. You know, thanks for having us.
Taking radio outside the box. Party 93.4. Shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I'm the kind to sit up in his room, sick and eyes filled up with blue. I don't know what you've done to me, but I know this much is true. I wanna do bad things with you. Okay,
shadows there, filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I wanna do real bad things with you. Bad things with you. I wanna do real bad things with you.
Vivirá. Caminé ese camino, me encontré con never missing a beat. Yeah. Boy, was it neat. Yeah. Not just knee deep, she was totally deep when she did the freak with me. Never missing a beat. Yeah. Boy, was it neat. Yeah.
The girl's a freak, the girl never misses a beat, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just me, she was still leaving, but she did leave me. It didn't twerk, no.
It wasn't fucking, no more.
Not just me, but she was still leaving, but she did leave me.
Funkadelic with Not Just Knee Deep. Earlier, I aired an interview with the writing duo Harris Gray, who make their home here in the great state of Colorado. They're behind the Vampire Vic Trilogy, and as mentioned at the top of the program, they have a website, harrisgray.com, along with a Facebook page, facebook.com/harrisgrayauthor, and a Twitter page, twitter.com/harrisandgray. So be sure to take a gander at all of those to keep up with their work. I'm going to conclude this show with My Own Summer from Deftones, who are laying the final touches on a new record as we speak. This is Party 93.4. Adios!